let's get started with some parsha as always. The Medrash tells us Parshas Truma, we're told to take for the Mishkan Zav Chesav Nechoshes Zahav Ze Avraham Shenivchan B'Kivshan Eish Kizahav. That Zahav represents Avraham Avinu, because Avraham Avinu had to go through Kivshan Eish, just like gold in the purification process. Kesef Ze Yitzchak Shenitzchav K'Kesef Al Gabei HaMizbeach. Kesef is Yitzchak because he was refined, I guess, or in some way on the Mizbeach like Kesef. Nechoshes Ze Yaakov Shem Nichashti Be'Berchein Hashem B'Galilei. And Nechoshes refers to Yaakov because when Lavan talks to Yaakov, he refers to Nichashti, that he engaged in some sort of Nichush to figure out why he was being so blessed at that time. But the point is that apparently each of these materials, whenever you have, you know, three of anything in the Torah, you always try to see, you know, how does it relate to the avos. And usually it does, but over here the Medrash does so explicitly that each of these three materials, Zav, Kesef, and Nechoshes, relate to one of the avos. Now, a couple of questions. Clearly, gold is the most precious of the three metals. Gold is the most valuable. Yaakov is the Av that's identified as the Bechira Avos. Yaakov is Teferes. Yaakov is the one that in Jewish thought, and certainly in Kabbalah, represents the ultimate of perfection, the one who possesses and builds on the characteristics of both Avram and Yitzchak, and he's the one that's Mitaso Shlema. And yet, when it comes to the precious metals, the most precious metal is associated with Avram Avinu and not with Yaakov. So why is that? If Yaakov is really the Bechira Avos, why is it that Avram Avinu is the one that's associated with Zahav? Furthermore, there is a principle in Halacha called Ein Anius B'Makom Ashiris. We have a competing principle that the Acharim try to work out to figure out when we apply each principle called HaTorah Chasal Mamonim Shal Yisrael, that the Torah is very makbid, that we shouldn't waste our money, but when it comes to the Mishkan, when it comes to the Mikdash, Ein Anius B'Makom Ashiris. We don't go cheap when it comes to the Mikdash. We don't use like disposable plates when it comes to the Mikdash, right? Everything is going to be on a top shelf kind of thing. Gvir culture, right? When it comes to the Mishkan, when it comes to the Mikdash, everything is top shelf kind of stuff, right? So that's how it works in the Mishkan and the Beis Hamikdash. Yet, in addition to the gold, we also have Zahav, we also have Kesef and Nechoshes. L'chora, if you want to go top shelf on everything, shouldn't it just all be gold? Shouldn't it just all be the most precious of all the metals, right? Or I guess nowadays platinum or whatever? Shouldn't it just be why would we diversify with Kesef and Nechoshes if Kesef and Nechoshes, by definition, bring down the value of what could have been entirely gold? So the idea of gold, silver, and copper is elaborated on by one of the Rishonim in his commentary on Chumash. It's a less popular Rishon, they've printed his commentary on Chumash, Rabbeinu Ephraim. Rabbeinu Ephraim is quoted a lot in Halacha. He's quoted in Beis Yosef all the time. He's quoted in Hilchos Purim, actually, in Beis Yosef. He's the one that says you're not supposed to get drunk, so he's not so popular in Yeshiva. But Rabbeinu Ephraim also has a lot of interesting comments on Chumash. He's the one that said that Binyamin was a werewolf. Right? That was one of the, believe it or not, in the Torah, that the Binyamin Zeivitro, if I can't send Binyamin down alone, why was he so afraid to send Binyamin? He said, oh, it's Yadua, that there's this thing called a werewolf, and Binyamin, the stomach, was really a werewolf, and he was afraid that he would tear apart all of Egypt. So Rabbeinu Ephraim has a comment about Zav and Kesef and Nechoshes. It's a little less out there than that comment. I'm trying to find the right word. Rabbeinu Ephraim explains that there's a beautiful remez in the words Zav, Kesef, and Nechoshes that relate to three different circumstances under which a person gives tzedakah. He particularly relates to the mitzvah of tzedakah, but I think we can expand it to all mitzvahs, really. And he says, Zahav zeh hanosein bari. Zayin, hey, beis, zeh hanosein bari. That is someone who gives when he is healthy. Sometimes a person doesn't need to be prompted by any life trauma to say, wait a second, what am I doing? Maybe I should be helping out other people. No, even when everything's good and he's healthy and everything's happy and everything, he just naturally wants to take care of other people. He gives when he's healthy and life is going beautifully. Kesef kisheroe sakana poseach. By the way, pro tip for any of you who are going into Rabbanus, no matter how much you hate Rashi Tevis and Gematrius and stuff,
Balabatim eat it up alive.
They love this stuff. This is like, oh, that was a brilliant idea. How Zohar spells out the letters. You're like, you can say over the most, you know, the most beautiful Reb Chaim and Reb Kiva. You're just like, yeah, it was all right, you know. But like, you know, this is like. So anyway, so Kesef Kisharoa Sakana Poseach. I'm getting so much trouble. Kisharoa Sakana Poseach. When you see a little bit of Sakana, so then Poseach. Then the person starts giving tzedakah. The person is not happy to give tzedakah when things are going well. There's nothing pushing him. Everything's going well. Why change anything? The money keeps piling up in my account. I'm happy. I'm healthy. Everything's good. Why do I have to do anything? But when he sees a little sakana in the future, when he sees a sign of trouble, you know, nothing yet, nothing terrible yet, but he sees that he's not sure, there's an uncertain future to the market or to the industry that he's in, or he's not sure whether he's going to suffer a health crisis, he hasn't been feeling well, he's going for a medical test, he doesn't yet have the results yet, he's not sure, that's where he's going to give a lot of tzedakah. It's a second level person who doesn't give tzedakah when things are going well, but when he sees on the horizon some challenge, that's when he gives tzedakah. Nechoshes neder chole sheyomar tenu, that sometimes a person is not moved by the first couple of signs of trouble. They wait until they are in a terrible, terrible situation, illness, tragedy, and then they wake up to their obligation toward a Kodesh Baruch Hu and toward other people. And that's true of personal relationships, just like it is of mitzvahs. A person is diagnosed with a terrible illness, and all of a sudden he realizes, you know, maybe I should be living life differently. Maybe I should be taking care of other people. And the truth is, usually it happens in the reverse. A person suffers a terrible illness, and all of a sudden everyone wants to be his friend. Everyone wants to reach out to him. I remember many years ago in DRS, I had a Talmud in the 11th grade who was diagnosed with cancer when he was in 11th grade. And I remember talking to him, Baruch Hashem, he's well, he has a family, wonderful, you know, Baruch Hashem, I got to spend some time with him last year, living out of state in a wonderful Jewish community, Baruch Hashem, everything's great. But I remember at the time, one of the things he was struggling with was that everybody wanted to be his best friend. And he's like, I just want my best friends to be my best friend. I want my acquaintances to be my acquaintances. And I want the guys that I hate to hate me back. You know, like, I'm not really interested in everyone being my best friend. But very often, that's what happens. Meaning when there's a feeling of a sense of loss, when there's a feeling of a sense of things not being right, when everyone is shaken up, all of a sudden they wanna come together. But it takes that. You know, Rav Perez, Rav Shiva of Yeshiva Farakaway, I once had an opportunity to spend some time with him because I was... placed on the search committee for a principal for the Yeshiva Ketana of Long Island many years ago. So the meetings were in Rabbi Perez's office because the Yeshiva Ketana of Long Island is officially affiliated with the Yeshiva Farakaway. So I learned a lot of fascinating things from him. Very, very interesting person. Very deep thinker. So he's a real Bal Musar. So he said that in the Musarvad he had in Yeshiva, he asked all the Talmidim to picture in their mind somebody who they really can't stand, somebody who they hate, they mamish can't stand the other person. And they said, okay, I got someone. Everyone was able to think of someone. I got someone. Then he said, okay, now I want you to picture that person dead, and you have to give the hesped. They're like, okay. And he gave him a piece of paper. He said, write the hesped. It doesn't have to be a long hesped. Write a paragraph or two of hesped for this person. And each person wrote a hesped. And he collected it, his intense most of that. He collected the papers. He's like, these are beautiful hesbedim. So like, why do you hate these guys? Right? Meaning, and the answer is, they hate them when things are going well. But obviously, if the person was sick, they would daven their heart out for them. They would, you know. But sometimes that's what it takes in order to inspire a person to feel a sense of needing to do something, of needing to help. You need to be shaken up a little bit. So that's the Zav Kesef and the Choshes, the way the Rabbeinu Ephraim sees it. That Zav represents people who serve the Ribbono Shel Olam, all is good. Kesef is people who serve the Ribbono Shel Olam only when they see the signs of impending doom, of impending trouble. And the Choshes is people only when things are really bad, only then they serve the Ribbono Shel Olam. Rosam Tzuratzkin and Rosayim Latorah has a beautiful mahalich in the three tefillos that the Avos were misaking. And he says that the three tefillos that the Avos were misaking each represent the life experience of that Av. He says, of all of the Avos, Avraham Avinu lived the most like royalty. He was wealthy beyond belief. who's respected immensely, you know, by Kol Malchei Nizra Chamarav, or Mashkim and Lepischo, everyone came to him for Eitzah, for everything. And he had challenges, he had 10 challenges, 10 very big ones, but he emerged unscathed from all those challenges, and he just kept on rising as a result of those challenges. And, you know, he became known as the Nasi Elokim. And after the war with the four kings, we said, Kol Malchei Nizra Chamarav, everyone respected him. The only dark cloud hanging over his life, which is a big one, was that he didn't have anyone to continue his legacy. He didn't have a child that he could be confident would continue his legacy. And then he finally, as an old man, received word that the child that he was hoping for and davening for and yearning for was going to be born. And in that context, Be'ash came out from Baboker, Lamakom Asher Amad Sham, says Marbach Chavav, Ein Amida Ela Tfila. That's where Avram Avinu's tefillah comes in. So the tefillah of Avram Avinu is a tefillah of davening when things are great, when things are perfect, when finally the cherry on top of a beautiful life has you know, been placed just perfectly, and he now has that news of the impending birth of Yitzchak. So all seems good in the world, and his tefillah is Shachris. A sunrise, a new day, and you know, it's wide open. How many positive things and good things could happen that day? You're always hopeful on a new day that things are going to go well, that it's going to be a good day. That's Shachris. Avram Avinu is Masakin Shachris because Avram Avinu represents reaching out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu when things are good. Yitzchak lived a less eventful but far more complex life. He never saw Gullus. His entire life was spent in Eretz Yisrael. Yet he was the first Jew ever to be told, Lech me'imanu, get out of here, we don't want you here. When we refer to 400 years of Galus Mitzrayim, it goes back to the birth of Yitzchak, which is ironic, because he never saw Galus. But apparently Yitzchak represents the beginning of the turning of the tide, the beginning of that, you know, that inflection point, where all of the sudden things, or not all of the sudden, not suddenly, but gradually, things were going to turn. He lived in that calm before the storm. He lived in a time when there was bright midday sun, but he knew that it was already on the other side of the sky, that it was going toward a sunset. And he sensed that, and his life was a turning point in the history of the Jewish people. So he davens tefillas mincha when the sun is still shining, but is about to set. So he instituted that tefillah as he waited for his future bride, as he awaited Rivka, meaning it was just before the greatest turning point a person could have in their life. When he's about to get married, when everything is going to change in his life, and you know, and you don't know what that's going to bring. Matzah or motzi, you know, marmi mavas or motzi yishu matzah tov. It could be anything, and he doesn't know where that's going to lead. And Yitzchak teaches us that when we're comfortable right now, but the future seems a little uncertain, we reach out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and we daven in that context also. And that tefillah has the unique combination of being said with a sense of peace, but also with a sense of urgency, both at the same time. And we're not yet, you know, in the darkness of night, so things aren't too difficult, but we're also not in the sunshine of the morning either. And that's why the most meaningful tefillos come at the mincha times of our lives. Elio was only then, the Gemara Brachos Daf Vav says, Ela b'tfilas mincha. Elio was only then at b'tfilas mincha, because mincha has the advantage of having the presence of mind to be able to daven, the clarity to be able to daven, and yet the sense of a little bit of urgency. And then comes Yaakov, and Yaakov's own words, he assesses his life. Ma'at v'ra'im hayu yimei shnei chayai. And my life was, my days were small and bitter. He lived a miserable life. He ran from a brother who wanted him dead to an uncle who wanted to take him for everything he had. Then he had to deal with his daughter being abducted, his overzealous sons causing trouble in defending their sister. He suffered from the heartbreak of losing his favorite son for so many years, and his life was a bitter, bitter cold Laila. And yet, in the midst of that darkness, he finds the strength and the courage to daven tefillas arvis. And he institutes that tefillah at what might have been the most difficult time in his entire life. Because when he was fleeing from Esav, but going to an uncle who's no better, so you know he's running away from the bear and about to face the lion, or vice versa, or whatever. He's going to a place where it's not going to be too much better for him, and he now doesn't have parents around him. He does not yet have a wife and children. He has nothing. He has no support system. He has no chevra. There's no one. There's no human interaction. No one to give him any sort of chizik. No wives. No children. No parents. No friends. He's alone in the world. And at that time, when the present and the future are so bleak, and we're not yet able to recognize the light that's at the, that inevitably will be at the end of the tunnel, so Yaakov is vayivka b'makom, he reaches out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, b'giyah l'tfila, kiva hashemesh, because things are going to turn around, things will turn around, but Yaakov is mesakein tfilas arvus, in the darkness of night, where he can't even see the sun rising above the horizon yet. And that's Yaakov. So now, if you put the Rabbeinu Ephraim and the Rav Zalman Saretzkin together, it actually works out quite beautifully, and you see the need for all three ideas. You can appreciate why each of the others is compared to the particular metal that they're associated with, and why all of the metals were necessary for a complete functioning Mishkan, which will truly represent the relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Jews through future generations. Zahav, ze Avraham. Gold represents serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu at a stage when everything is good. That's Avraham. That's Avraham Avinu. That's the Shachris of our lives. Zahav, ze Avraham. Kesef, ze Yitzchak. Kesef, silver represents somebody who performs mitzvahs when things seem to be turning for the worse. That's Kesef, when he starts to see the sakana in the future. That's exactly Yitzchak, says Rabbeinu Ephraim, when you put it together with the Zalman Saretzkin. Nechoshes, ze Yaakov. Copper represents the performance of mitzvahs during difficult, during stressful times, which is exactly what Yaakov taught us to do. Now you understand why a Mishkan needs all three, because a Mishkan represents, a Mikdash represents, not just the Ananias Mokam Hashiru, so we don't go cheap, but it represents a connection to the Ribbono Shel Olam. So it has to give us a remez to all of the contexts within which we're supposed to connect to the Ribbono Shel Olam. You know, sometimes what people get used to a certain way of living, whether it be that they live very comfortably, or sometimes that they live not comfortably at all. And when things change in the way that they live, their relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam changes. And that shouldn't be the case. Meaning the relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam should always grow and should always intensify regardless. But a person shouldn't have a situation where, I know how to be an Eved Hashem when all my needs are taken care of and I'm healthy. But I don't know how to be an Eved Hashem, and I can't imagine being an Eved Hashem when something goes wrong. Or vice versa. You know, I know how to be an Eved Hashem when I'm dirt poor and I have nothing. But now I have a sudden success, and you know, I sold the business for millions of dollars. Now I don't know how to be an Eved Hashem. We should never have something like that. A person has to be able to connect to the Ribbono Shel Olam in all three contexts. You know, the person has to have that sense, as Rosh Hashanah says, Shivisi, because Hashem Lenegdi Samer. The person has to have that sense of Shavius, that sense of consistency in life, of being comfortable with the relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. I was just in Chicago last week, and I saw a father of an old friend of mine who I went to KBY with. And it reminded me of the time when I was in KBY with this guy. His name was Yosh Myers, who lives in Baltimore now. So his father introduced himself to his mother also. Very, very nice people. And I remember, yeshiva guys, as many of you may have experienced, tend to get bored at some time. So like, we make up crazy stuff and believe whatever people tell us. So at least that was my experience. So like, I remember one day in Keren B'Yavneh, words started spreading like wildfire through the Beis Medrash that Rav Kaduri, you know who Rav Kaduri was? He was the biggest mekubel of his generation. He died when he was, I don't know, like 300 years old or something, like a few years ago. So Rav Kaduri was the most respected mekubel of the generation, and word spread throughout the yeshiva that Rav Kaduri said the world is ending on Tuesday, whatever it was, you know, like the next week, like the whole world is coming to an end. And we're like, oh, okay, it makes sense, you know. Like, so everyone was like freaking out. The whole yeshiva was much like freaking out. What do we do now? So I remember Yosh Meyer said, Arisa, if the world is coming to an end, you should probably be learning. And if the world is not coming to an end, you should probably be learning. So why don't we just learn? It's an important lesson. Meaning, it happened that bit, that Tuesday when the world was supposed to come to an end, there was an earthquake in Caribbean. Like the Kodesh Baruch was like playing with us. It was not an earthquake. But yeah, so that I think is the lesson of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. That's the lesson of Zav, Kesef, Nechoshes, that we should always have that that sense of consistency in our Avodas Hashem, regardless of what life brings. Okay.